Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 733. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2025 fantasy baseball season. It's a day after the Super Bowl. This is very fitting, folks. We are going to talk Philadelphia Phillies today, and man, oh man, how things are going good in fighting Phil's land for many reasons. But to help me break down this very fun team, especially for fantasy, lots of areas to go in fantasy here. You can find this gentleman over at Rotoballer. He's an editor at Rotoballer. He is a writer and editor at pitcherlist.com. Lots of our friends over there. You can find him on Blue Sky at johnnygo.bsky.social. I keep saying they got to find a way to shrink that a little bit. That'd be so much more convenient. But he's here. He's going to help us out here. Johnny Gordon, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Bubba. Thanks for having me on. And like you said, I'm riding high now in the Eagles victory, but we'll pivot to baseball and I'll try not to start the Eagles fight chant in the middle of the episode.
If they come flying in, go for it. I'm not going to knock you. Like I always tell people, I'm a Dolphins fan. They haven't won a game since I was in high school in the postseason. So I just live vicariously through everybody else. Basically, this is why they created fantasy sports. It's for sure. People that are fans of teams like the Dolphins. Like you just learn to go with it. So embrace it. I had my Giants fun in the 2010s and it's pretty darn awesome. So I'm with you on that for sure. Before we get in here, I kind of mentioned where they can find you. If you got anything coming up, you want to talk about it, pitcher list or anything, knock yourself out.
No, just like, obviously, hopefully all your viewers, know pitcher list, love pitcher list. It's a great resource. We've got great metrics there. Lots of different subscription levels. So check us out there and pretty much it.
Yeah. Go check them out. PL Pro over there. It's an awesome tool. I've obviously plugged that for quite a while doing the first pitch pod and I pre-recorded last week's shows because of work commitment, so I haven't been on since then. But for those that live under a rock, PitchCon was completed, and they raised over $13,000 this year for ALS, which is absolutely amazing. And I'm glad to be a part of it every year. It's always a pretty, pretty awesome thing.
Yeah, it's an amazing show, and you can look back and watch all those episodes. So take advantage. Lots of good stuff.
Lots of good stuff there. Lots and lots of good stuff. We got good stuff here. And I know I should have told you just before the air, but this is what before we started. But I put on here NFBC ADP of 115 till now. We can use that. I shrunk it down a little bit. So we'll just ballpark like I did 127 because it's like the last 10 drafts. But it'll just give us a wiggle room there. But we're going to go player by player here for the most part and get us ready for fantasy. So we'll just start off with one question I always ask before we talk players, though, Johnny. What were your thoughts on how 2024 went for the Philadelphia Phillies?
So 2024 started kind of from a place where we had a rough 2023 NLCS exit after the World Series before that. And we started off really strong. We had a pretty decent first half. I think by June, the Phillies were first in Major League Baseball. And then they kind of just crashed and burned, which is going to be a theme that we're going to talk about with a lot of players, a tale of two halves. And I think obviously, when the players or multiple players are doing this, then the team also kind of suffers the same fate. They were 500 down the stretch after the All-Star break, 33-33. And we won the division, but it was a year when Atlanta had those injuries. Strider was out, Acuna was out, and they had people step up for them. Schwalenbach, they had Sale, but we barely won the division. And that was with Atlanta, with all the injuries they had. We kind of hobbled into the playoffs and sputtered there. The Mets kind of like pretty quickly disposed of us. And, you know, look at the offseason and you have Dave Dombrowski. He kind of like went shopping at the clearance sale rack. He didn't really do much. 1 year contracts all around. We'll talk about some of those players. Kepler, Romano, Joe Ross, we probably won't talk about. And then they also picked up Jesus Luzardo, which is an interesting fifth starter there, but also kind of on the cheap. So it's pretty much the same team going into 2025. I think we have a really solid rotation. The players are going to have to do something about that streakiness, because if they kind of show up the same way as they did last year, then with Atlanta and the Mets on the rise, I we'll talk about, I guess, later, our future predictions for the Phillies. But I don't know. It's not the same as the Eagles. Not feeling the same warmth there.
I'll give it time. Give it time. We'll see some of those pictures from the Grapefruit League and get you going. And another snowstorm or something through Philadelphia area. And then you'll start feeling the vibes for sure. Because this is in general, the NL East, you kind of hit on it with, you know, you got the Mets, you got the Braves. The Marlins, I think, are pretty much gone. But they've flashed once in a while. It's like, bug you guys, it feels like. And then you got the Phillies. There's good teams there, and they're going to beat up on each other, kind of like the NL or the AL East does in some of these divisions. So you never know. The streakiness is a problem because you might not streak at the right time, because this Philadelphia team as a whole, super talented. It's just, will they click, as you're saying? So will be interesting to see how that comes together. Let's start it off with Schwarbaum himself, one of the most jolly-looking leadoff hitters in all of baseball, and I can get away saying that, folks. So absolutely love Schwarber for many reasons. Actually, he's actually losing weight. Last I saw in a golf clip, I was like, what in the heck's going on here with the big man? But good for him. ADP's around 78, 80 over the last 10 drafts or so. We know he's an OBP guy. It's just a matter of, is the average going to be there? How are we feeling on Schwarber as he enters 2025?
So yeah, like you said, he's kind of like a hitter where we know exactly what we're getting. We know his strengths, we know his warts, and they're all built into the price. He is this amazing sort of like unicorn leadoff hitter. He had the NL record for home runs last year for a leadoff hitter. And there's really no reason to think the power is going to fall off on a cliff in any way. So, you know, 40 home runs, 100 RBIs, 100 runs is there. Like you said, he's the high OBP, low batting average. Though his batting average was pretty good this past season, higher than it has been in the past. So 248 was his best since 2021. And projections don't really believe that's going to stick around and have him back around 225. And I think this having that 30% K rate, that 15% walk rate is always going to kind of have you that low average. And, you know, if you picked a players on earlier in a draft that have lower average, you want to stay away from Schwarber. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing is his streakiness. I saw at Pitcher List, Scott Chu compared his slugging percentage rolling chart from 2022 to 2024 to an EKG. So just have it up and down. If you're a roto player, you can handle that, because at the end, it all works out. The 40 home runs, the RBIs, the runs. But if you're a weekly player, then, you know, have fun in that roller coaster. But that ADP of around 80, like you said, I think that's a fair price. He's util only also in some leagues. I think that's important to note. So he's probably, you know, Shohei's the top of the util players. And then you have Ozuna and Rooker are kind of like around similar ADPs as him, I believe. Mm-hmm. And you always have the preference. Do you want to fill that spot with like a DH only player or not? I'm fine with doing that. Out of these three players, I probably would go Schwarber, because I know for sure what I'm getting in Schwarber. I feel like he doesn't have that cliff. He knows for sure what you're going to get. And you also have a contract year. So I don't know if that's really a scientific stat, but there's always the player that's playing for something. You know, he's always has that fire lit under him. So that's where I sort of see with Schwarber again. I play in a lot of OBP leagues personally, so I do go after Schwarber a lot. Even if I wasn't a Phillies fan, but you got to watch that average.
Yeah, no, a lot of great points there, but I love the OBP. Yeah, he's skyrocketed. He's like almost a first round pick in OBP the way he does things. Yeah. Usually he's on that turn, early second, give or take. And I'm with you on that 100%. Like in Tout Wars, there's an OBP league. Like that stands out in a big way where Schwarber, like you said, he had 248 this last year. If he hits 250-ish, he's worth every bit of pick 80 or above. Like it's great. Yeah. Now, if he goes and hits 225, you might be second guessing things, but at the same time, you're going to get, like you said, you're still getting the power regardless one way or another. It's just the other parts about him. So that's where the trickiness of drafting, and basically it's your team context, as you mentioned at the beginning there, is how you dictate Schwarber. And I did not realize a contract year. So that could be interesting discussion points throughout the season, depending on how things are going with the Schwarber there.
Yeah.
All right, another guy that's, you know, kind of, you know, Schwarber coming off a big year. Trey Turner, the end stat line, like you mentioned, the Roto versus weekly, in the end, Trey Turner's numbers are still pretty good. They're not what we expect from Trey last year, but pretty good. How are we feeling on Trey entering 2025? ADP is around 27. This is used to be a back-end first-round guy. Now he's back-end second-round guy. So you're getting the price drop. But should we be concerned with what we saw last year, or do we expect to bounce back?
I think you kind of have to separate your view of what Trey Turner was in the beginning of his career on the Nationals and sort of what he is now in the past couple of years. He was a streaky player. It's interesting, in 2023, he had the infamous first half where he was stone cold, and then he like went hot in the second half after all the fans cheered for him. And this was sort of weirdly the opposite, where he had a really strong first half. He did miss some time with injuries, and then he did have that very slow, cold pace going on. And I know as a Phillies fan, you know, just taking away fantasy, just he was terrible in the playoffs. And it really stuck that maybe some fantasy players don't necessarily feel the same pain as Phillies players. His stolen bases plummeted also. He had only 19 on the year. Usually he's hovering around 30. Again, not the player that he used to be, but 30 is something that we should expect from him. And he did mention that after he was injured that he didn't run as much. He didn't want to re-injure his hamstring, which was the injury. So I could see him get back up to 30 steals, which does give him some of his value over there. But otherwise, his ratios are kind of in line with what we saw in 2022, his last season with the Dodgers, around 300 at-bats. 300 batting average and about 465 slugging. So this is just the Trey Turner that exists now. It's not the same Trey Turner as before. You can't get caught up in trying to think you're drafting someone based in the name of who he used to be. I do think he can get back up to 600 plate appearances this year if he's healthy. He can probably get up. Projections have him around 24 home runs. I think he could get up to 30 if he stays healthy. And the question really is, though, when will he hit them? You know, again, you have that streakiness of that the Phillies players just fall into. So I think his projections are slightly too low. I wouldn't draft him as my starting shortstop, probably. If I'm going to draft an early shortstop, I want to go for one of those first rounders. I think those are the guys I'm really going towards. He's much closer to Lindor, I would say, in ADP than – or I would say his value is closer to Lindor than ADP is making it seem. Okay. But again, if I'm getting sniped then and from one of the first shortstops, I wouldn't be afraid to take him, but I'm not going into draft saying I need to have Trey Turner.
Yeah, and it's definitely looking at his ADP. It goes back if you have an early draft pick, that's where he pairs with it type thing. Because I've usually been in the back end of most of my drafts so far, so I haven't even had a discussion to take Trey Turner for the most part. But after, you know, mid second round, there's not a lot of speed for a while if you go by ADP, and that's where Trey kind of stands out if that's what you're looking at. So I don't know if it's a draft pick out of necessity or want at that point in time when you're taking Trey Turner, because I'm with you. It comes, and we have this discussion with as players get older. Like I remember a couple of years ago having the Christian Yelich discussion, like this is who he is now. You need to like this player who's still very good, but he's not the guy that was an MVP candidate, you know, a few years before that. Yeah. Trey Turner still very good, as you mentioned, but like the expectations need to draw back, and, you know, still a pretty good five category guy, all things considered. That's why he's still a second round pick. But I'm with you in most of that discussion point where I still like him, but I remember a couple of years ago, I was going to bat like he should be first overall. Like I was making that fight, and definitely not like doing that anymore when it comes to,
Trey Turner. Not that guy.
But definitely someone that I could see, if he stays healthy, being kind of sneaky. All right, another guy's talking. Again, you are right about the streaky thing. I never really thought of it that much until we go player by player here. And this is one Bryce Harper, everybody, who is very, very streaky. But in the end, gets his stat lines. It's for a decent average, has his pop, all the goodies there. Steals is always kind of a question. But ADP's 22. It's a first base position that it's pretty much Freddie Freeman, Vladito, Harper. Those are your main guys going early. Pete Alonso goes a little later, but that's like your primary first base pocket if you're going to go early. How are we feeling on Bryce Harper this year? Because it's like it's a guy that if he stays on the field, I always think he has MVP talent. It's just never seems to come together at the same time.
Yeah, it's pretty much expected that he's going to have a short stint on the IL, and I think also he never really gets like. I mean, one season he had a catastrophic injury, but oftentimes he's playing injured and he's playing through injuries. So, which is great for the Phillies, but not so great for fantasy because you're not having Harper at his like highest level possible. And I like that comp with Vlad. I think like they're going around like four or five picks away from each other. Mm-hmm. So if you're like comparing them, they're both elite bats, they're both power bats from the first base. Supporting cast, I think, goes to Harper in that situation, even though his counting stats have surprisingly, if you check out his stats, not been as high as you would expect Harper to have, someone with that kind of power. And obviously, I think the missed time does come into it. He has a little bit of speed, but, you know, not as much as other players. He still hits the ball hard at his age. And I think he's a solid floor guy with a good price. I think there's value where he's going. You look at his possible outcomes. He could be at the end of the season a first round talent. Like, you could look back and be like, I got a first round talent in the second round. I don't think it's going to drop much more than where you're drafting him. So I think you're drafting him at a solid floor price. And for first base, I think that's pretty good. There's a lot of high floor-esque players at that range. Like Freeman, you could even say Trey Turner, we just talked about him. Yordan, I think those are pretty much high floor players you're getting at that second round price. And if you're looking at some of the other people going around then, you have Duran, you have Churio, similar ADPs, but you're buying them at, you know, what they could be. And so I'm going always with those high floor players rather than those, you know, high ceiling players with such an early pick. You need to come out of the first three rounds with like a solid core of your team. Harper can create that solid core of your team.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Like, I'm usually one of the safest drafters on the face of the planet. This year, I'm buying into Churio a bit for the appeal, but 90% of my drafts, I'm 1,000% in line with what you just said there about getting that floor, go, go, go. Because I do have some Harper shares for the exact reasons you mentioned, is it's like, man, if you could just put one more season together, there's like a 40 home run dude there with 120 RBIs. Like, it's all there still. He did, like you said, that it's that IL stint that he plays through the injury because he seems to not go on the IL for like 2 weeks before he goes on the IL every time. So, yeah, trust me, you're the Philly fan. I've watched this from a distance, and it's a very – because he is almost a Giant at one time, and I was all about that life. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Thankfully not.
Yeah, no, lucky – well, it's probably lucky for him that ballpark plays a lot better than Pac Bell. All right, this one I'm really curious your thoughts on. It's on Nick Castellanos, a guy that a lot of us were excited when he got out of Detroit, and we saw some great years in Cincinnati, and then we saw an amazing year in 2023. All in all, still a good year in 2024, but obviously a step back year. Projections have him kind of duplicating the 2024 season. He's got an ADP of 184, so he's not costing a lot to get him in drafts. But it seems like depending on who you talk to, it's like, well, it's just going to be another decline for Castellanos. He doesn't want to be there. They don't want him or whatever. There's a lot of different things you hear. So that's what I'm really curious your thoughts on this one. Where are we at on Castellanos in 2025?
Cassie's an interesting player because he had an interesting season when we had so many injuries. He kind of was Mr. Clutch. He's the one who kind of kept us in it. In the playoffs, he was like our MVP. And this is like the Castellanos that the year before we were all wanting him out of Philadelphia because just a swing and miss in his game, and just he was pretty terrible. So even though he didn't have that amazing of a season, he did keep us in it, and he did improve in some areas. So strikeouts are always a big thing for Castellanos, and last season he only had 139, but he had 185 the season before. So that's cutting down on those strikeouts significantly. He walked a little bit more. Projections think both those areas are going to stick. They think he's going to continue to have lower strikeouts. He's going to continue to walk more. He's has a full-time role for the Phillies. So I think his 2024 season kind of saved him. Now there's another Phillies player, which is like the one everyone's jumping on, which we'll talk about soon, out of third base. But he there's no longer any risks of him being shipped out. And his home runs and doubles did go down in 2024. So there's that power question because he always had that power element to him. He seems to be transforming in a way into like more of a contact hitter. So expecting 20, 25 home runs max with lower counting stats. And those projections that I've seen, I think are pretty dead on what we're going to expect from Castellanos in 2025. And his ADP, I believe, is around like 180, as you said. So it's kind of ironic because that is around the same ADP as some other Phillies players, Boehm, Stott, which we'll talk about, which are very different players. You look at sort of like the players, the outfielders going around that range. And I saw, you know, Cyrus talk about this. There's essentially when you look at outfielders at that point, there's two types of outfielders available. Then you have platoon risk and platoon proof. So some of the platoon risk ones are more of the high end players that you want to look for their ceiling more. And then there's platoon proof, which are the less exciting players like Castellanos. So I think if I'm looking for like a fourth outfielder or which is probably around where Castellanos is going, I want to have a player that I can play full time. I'm not going out of my way to get Castellanos. I'll probably, you know, Taylor Ward, Nimmo, Helio Ramos, O'Neill. Those are all players that are going around the same time as Castellanos. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily targeting one over the other, but those are a group of players I think at their value, I think could make really good bench players or if you have a deep outfield on your team.
Yeah, and that's that area, that pocket you just mentioned there, a lot of similarities and a lot of like team needs picks in that group there. And I know I have shares of a little bit of all of them in that area. And, you know, you might like one more than the other, but your Casty point kind of falls in line, and especially the part you mentioned with the Eno Saris part. I guess for me, I'm sitting there going, okay, speculating in my brain. Okay, if he's a fourth outfielder, if worst comes to worst, I can drop him, move on. But it's like, okay, he's platoon proof. So what if we get just a run of, even if it's 4 months of the old Casty, not the whole year, just give me like 3 to 4 months of it. That kind of, to me, jumped him over a few guys. But you never know. Like, there's still, like, some of these platoon guys are pretty darn good. So it's a very interesting discussion point in there. So, yeah, I was just curious because I'm not – this whole pocket, I'm not going in wanting probably just one of those guys. I'm kind of high on Elliot Ramos, but that's kind of me. But I've got shares of all these guys. So I'm not opposed to any one of them. A guy I have been opposed on, and you can talk me off the rail here if you want, but I bought into him a couple years ago, and then I watch him, and I'm just like, okay, the contact skills are great. Quality contact's really good. It just never fabricates to what I'm expecting, and it never has, and you have that one big RBI year because that happens on a great team, but you can't count on that every year. Alec Bohm, starting third baseman, who's been in trade rumors as well to top it off to make it more fun. But ADP is 180, going 4 picks ahead of Castellanos. So he's right in that ballpark there. What are your thoughts on Bohm? Because I know this is the guy that they booed until he flipped them off, and then he became a good hitter again because Philadelphia is awesome for those things. But I respect it. I respect it, and the players do, you could tell. So what are we thinking with Alec Bohm this year?
Yeah, so there's the first half, which was a dream first half for Bohm. Like, his slash line was 295, 348, 482, league leader in doubles in RBIs, 33 doubles, 70 RBIs in the first half. And he was an all-star. I think he jinxed it all because he was in the home run derby, and that just, like, you know, obviously could mess with your swing. And jokes aside, though, his second half was terrible. He had 251, 299, 382. He had 11 doubles and 27 RBIs in the second half. So when you look all together at the number of, you know, 97 RBIs, I think sometimes if you just look at a player's stats, you're like, oh, this player was, like, really good. But there was that crazy split that obviously, you know, some other players have these splits first half, second half, but 70 to 27, like, that's an insane drop. And he did miss the beginning of September with a hand injury, but he was so bad that he was even benched. He didn't start one of the playoff games against the Mets. Like, that's how cold he was. He could not get back into it when he got back. And like you said, trade talk this offseason. But look, the positives, he's 28. He's a contact hitter, so he can get back to 20 home runs, I think. And the price is really, really cheap, I think, you know, for 180, for what the potential is there for what he can do and what has done in the past. Can he be that first half player for the entire season? I don't think so, but I don't think he's that second half player either. He's somewhere in the middle. And I would not wait on third base and be like, I want Alec Bohm at his price to be my starting third baseman. Like, I think that's a mistake, but I think there's great value there. If you're plugging in a corner infielder, like, Alec Bohm is someone I am targeting as my corner infield in some of these leagues that I'm doing. And I think his ceiling is much higher than the price that he has right now at ADP.
All right. You convinced me a little bit there. I'll give you that. Because, like, right, I said, I've seen the skills. The skills look good. It's just, man, it just never really has fabricated to what, I guess, the prospect hype was for Alec Bohm. But, yeah, again, got to kind of put those aside. It's been a few years. Maybe this is who he is what I need to tell myself. All right. Father Time is undefeated. We don't know exactly when Father Time arrives, but he gives us signs as things come on here. And I'm not saying JT Realmuto is going to, like, just completely fall off the face of the earth, but at least, again, this might be who he is now. His ADP is down to 150. This guy used to be the first, second, maybe third out of catcher off the board. That is way down the list now. He's, like, outside the top 10, depending on where you're drafting catchers. Where are we at on JTR? Because if he's not running, he does deserve to be in the middle pack of potential catchers.
Yeah, I mean, old man JT's 33 now. He's last year, I think he was coming off the board as a second overall catcher in leagues, and he's taken that drop. And he's, you know, when an older established player has that drop, you have to figure out, like, is this a value pick or is this just, is he over the hill? Like, is this someone who you should not be targeting? And you're right, stolen bases, like that stolen base factor, I think a lot of his value comes down to that. It dropped off. Was it injury related? Unclear, but he had two stolen bases last year. One was in April and one was in September. So like the two bookends of the season. But before that, he was kind of consistent in the three seasons before that, 16, 21, 13, you know, consistent. But, you know, some would you be expecting between, you know, 10 to 15 steals? Projections have him around 120 games. Again, the starting games also, like as he gets older, he's not going to start as much as he did before. So the plate appearances go down. Would he have about 8 to 10 steals like the projections say? I could see him get back up there. But I don't know if the projections are being too happy about what or too, you know, expect too much about what JT can do. I think they think that he's going to have more plate appearances than he might end up having. It's also his last year of a contract, so he is playing for something. I don't know if he would remain with the Phillies next year, but I think he values himself as not someone who's over the hill. So he is super cheap compared to where he's been in the past. When I checked his ADP, I think last week, it was even higher. So he does seem to be dropping now. I think it was around 140. Now you said it was 150. So he's getting cheaper, and probably as the season comes closer to starting, he'll be even cheaper. Right now, he's sandwiched between Langoliers and Stevenson. I think he's kind of ranked well. I think he's like in that Langoliers-Stevenson sandwich. I'm not targeting him, but I wouldn't be against taking him at that price. I just don't think that you should. I think it's name value here. I think that's the danger.
Yeah, and then I pretty much echo what everything you said right there, because I think he's still a very formidable catcher. I think he's good. Name value is keeping him where he is, because like I think this is my personal point, is I agree. I think that bats are going to be lower. So to me, that just drops him down a little bit more compared to where he's going in drafts. To that point, if he were to keep dropping an ADP come like March, I might actually get a share or two of JTR. But it's just kind of where I'm seeing him right now. And these catchers get older, and eventually, like, just the wear and tear. That's kind of what got to him last year, was the knees, and then he had like the hand wrist things. Like it's catching related stuff. Sure. That's just the reality of it. That's any catcher. Like Salvi's a unicorn in this regard. Like he just somehow keeps playing, and he's about the same age as JTR, if not older. Like they're pretty close, and it's just like I'm waiting for him, and he just continues to, you know, do it. It's ridiculous. But most catchers will slowly start deteriorating in their early 30s, and JTR is just another one of those. It's just how it goes.
And I feel bad besmirching his good name. He's my daughter's favorite player in the Phillies, but I told her, like, I'm going on a podcast, I'm gonna have to say some negative things. Her fantasy team, she can draft him, but
exactly,
he's not gonna be in my fantasy team most likely.
Yep, exactly. If you still like him, go for it. Fantasy should be fun, folks. So enjoy it. All right, we're going to pick we got these paired together, and you even mentioned you wanted to talk to them about together. This is perfect. You hinted at it earlier. The one-year platoon outfielder types, that's Max Kepler. ADP is around 360. I've always liked Max Kepler, but probably perfect. I think his ballpark could be interesting for Max Kepler. Then you got Brandon Marsh, ADP 314. He's just kind of a Philly legend just because of plays with his hair on fire and all of those kind of things. Took over the Jason Worth role, basically, in that regard. But you like Marsh. He does his thing. He was supposed to, you know, platoon with Rojas or whatever. Like, there's a lot of parts here, so you'll probably fill in all of this. But where do we sit on this Kepler-Marsh situation? And they're both coming at a pretty cheap ADP.
Yeah, I think when they signed Kepler, there was talk right away that I saw in the beat writers and just on Sports Talk Radio, like, who's going to be the platoon bat? Is it going to continue to be Marsh? Is Kepler going to be a full-time role? It seems that Kepler, unless spring training tells us otherwise, has been brought in to be the full-time left fielder for the Phillies. Now, both of them struggle against lefties, both Kepler and Marsh. Last year, Kepler was a platoon bat in Minnesota. And he was pretty much a league average hitter. He wasn't anything that special, but he has had shown power in past seasons. And I think the goal is for the Phillies to have him reclaim that role. And it's his role to lose. For Marsh, I would say that he is going to platoon with Rojas. I think that, you know, projections have Kepler around 500 at bats. And last time he had 500 at bats, he had 24 home runs. So projections are only giving him 15. So for a pick that late, I think that's a pretty good, you know, lottery ticket to get, you know, close to 25 home runs, possibly if everything works out well. He's pretty much just free in a dart throw. So why wouldn't I want him on my team? For Marsh, I really don't get the ADP and the love. Maybe it is the hair. I don't know, but it's around 310, 315.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
Why? I really don't get it. Like, there are better upside picks around that. You have Soderstrom, you have Horwitz just above him, you have Aranda just below him. Like, there's so many players that I want to, like, draft that late that have crazy upside, and I'm not going to waste a pick, even a pick, you know, post 300 on a player that's a platoon bat that's, you know, fun to watch. Like, we want to make baseball fun, but, like, I think that's a little too much of, like, he can stay off my fantasy roster.
Yeah, 1,000% agree. Like, I love Kepler. Like I said, I liked him before he was on the Twins. Kind of knew who he was. We know who he is. He's probably going to platoon, but it Marsh will platoon before he will. Let's put it that way, if that ever takes shape. So I've been confused by this ADP the whole time. Like, am I missing something here? Is there a report that came out? Like, what are we doing? I know Kepler's got his injury concerns and whatnot, but right now he's healthy. So you draft him, you roll with it, that ballpark. There's a lot of things that should factor in. And like in Minnesota, I think the pressure is almost on him at times to be the guy more often than not with all the injuries that are always there. Philadelphia, he's just a dude. Like, he's just on the in the lineup. Like,
ninth, like, what, like, he just, yeah, he can do whatever he wants, and it's fine.
But yeah, no, I'm with you there. So I've been wondering about that as well when it comes to the ADP. All right, let's talk about another guy that I bought into last year as this, you know, we got this power speed guy. He's young. Like, he's gonna be 28 eventually this year. He's just 27. You know, he had 15 homers, 31 steals. Last year, got back to 32 steals. So, like, the end stat line was closer. The average dropped a ton. We're talking Bryson Stott, ADP of 173. I had a lot of concerns because, like, he started getting platooned at times last year and everything. Where are we at on Bryson Stott? Because, like, the speed's undeniable. The average between two different guys, basically, throughout his first 2 years. Still young, though, so a lot can change. Where are we at on Bryson Stott?
Yeah, I mean, Stott is kind of a two-trick pony. He has a good source of late steals. I think he has 30 stolen bases around the last couple seasons. Yep. He also has a decent batting average late. So if you actually look at Andrés Giménez, it's like a pretty good comp. Their projections are kind of the same also for next season. So if you're trying to figure out who he is, they're kind of similar players. And he does have that platoon risk, like you brought up. You have Sosa, who plays off the bench, but I can tell you as a Phillies fan, like, you see Sosa a lot more than you see. I go to games and it's like, oh, Sosa start. Like, you would think that Stott, you know, would have more playing time, but he's just benched sometimes against lefties. And personally, I don't think I'm targeting Stott. I kind of like the other second basemen that are going around the same time as him that are more sleeper candidates, or at least candidates that I think have more upside, whether that's Keith, Holiday, Horwitz, we mentioned before too. So I always love just kind of like throwing darts at like these players that are, you know, have this higher upside. While Stott, I know exactly what I'm getting. I don't think there's another gear there that he's going to reach. I don't really buy into that, you know, power that is going to improve in that much. But he's a great player in case you messed up the beginning of your draft and you realize I don't have enough steals, or I have a really low batting average. Like, maybe you drafted Schwarber, then you want to draft Stott after that kind of like balances out your batting average a bit. So he's someone to, like, I think have in your queue as sort of like a backup to like balance out any mistakes you might have made earlier on. But he's not someone that I'm going for. Again, you have that platoon risk. He bats at the low end, the lower part of the lower third of the Phillies lineup. So nothing that I'm necessarily going out of my way to target.
Okay, cool. You solidified some of my thoughts there on him, because I did roster him last year, and that second half we started platoon, he was so frustrating. Like, what, like, he's young, let him go. But yeah, so it is going to be a thing, it seems like. Before we head to the mound here, do we need to talk at all about, like, you know, the Sosas, the Weston Wilsons, the Rojases when it comes to fantasy?
I don't think they have much fantasy value. Like, you know, if we're talking about Marsh being like a fantasy aberration, then I think these guys are just bench bats and nothing special there.
With you on that. So let's head to the mound here. You mentioned it on the intro. Pretty darn good rotation. And a couple of these guys are getting older. There's a couple like, could this pan out? But overall, pretty good stuff. Excuse me. So let's start with the anchor of the staff. And it used to be one Aaron Nola. We'll talk about him shortly. But it has turned into Zach Wheeler's rotation over the last couple of years. And I think for pretty good reasons. Maybe in Philadelphia, they still say it's Aaron Nola's world. That's fine because he's earned those rights. I'm not going to deny that. But Zach Wheeler has been near an ace. He's like the third or fourth pitcher off boards right now. ADP is around 20 to 25, depending on your draft. Getting older, but just a consistent workhorse. How are we feeling as he enters his age 35 season?
Yeah, even Philly fans will say this is Wheeler's rotation. He's the SP1. Nola's time has come and gone. I mean, we'll talk about him in a few minutes. He's still pretty awesome. But Wheeler, it's kind of crazy looking back at the beginning of his career, how injury-prone he was. Mm-hmm. And now he seems to be a model of health and, you know, consistency. And that's what's keeping his draft price, I think, a fair price, but one that's high because he was a third SP off the board last year. After Strider and Burns, he's the third one now after Skeens and Skubal. And he set career marks last year in wins, ERA, WHIP. He had a league-leading batting average against of 192. He has probably one of the best sinkers in the game. He has elite extension with a sinker, arm side break. His sweeper and curve are also above average. So three out of his pitches are in pitcher lists. We have like this metric called out percentage, you know, which tells us the average out rate of each pitch, so we can measure it against other pitchers that pitchers throw against the league average. And he has the top sinker in the league and two above average pitches. So three of his pitches are top out pitches in the league. So you're getting a quality starter that you're getting an ace. And it's kind of interesting to put him up against Skubal and Skeens. Now, obviously those are the more exciting picks, but Wheeler has done this, you know, for a couple of seasons in a row already, and there's really no reason to think he's going to stop doing that. But Skubal has had his Cy Young season, and obviously they're both, you know, Skeens and Skubal are talented individuals and ace pitchers, but you're paying a price of one season or half a season or what could be. When Wheeler, you know for sure what is going to be. You know, obviously you never really know, but I think that's, it's the boring discount. Like, really, could Wheeler be the SP1? You can make an argument that Wheeler should be the SP1, but you're getting him at the end of the second round. I think that's a pretty good value. Now, me personally, I don't like taking pitching that early. Mm-hmm. I think there's tons and tons of really good pitchers later on in the draft. But if you are building a rotation and you want to wait a bit on pitching and you want to get a really good ace in the beginning, I think it's better to take that bat in the first round or the early and wait for Wheeler to drop to you in the second round rather than taking that high pick on Skeens and Skubal. And the hitters, I think, are just going to be better to take in the first round. And Wheeler's that's solid pick over there.
Preach. So I'm going to say it's preach because I'm 1,000% on this page. A lot of things in common on this show here, thoughts on these players. But I've done my rankings. I'm like, yes, I have Skubal and Skeens ahead of them, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm picking Wheeler if I have my choice first. Like, I'm taking a hitter on the same board. I usually wait as well. Been a common thing. But if I'm taking pitching early, the argument I actually enjoy talking about, and Ryan and I had it on our last Bubble in the Bloom SP ranking show, is Wheeler versus Gilbert for that potential number one overall. I think that's a better conversation than Skeens and Skubal, yeah, personally. And so, and you can get both of them in the rounds two or three type thing. So I love Wheeler. We can't predict injuries for anybody. So, like, the only argument I'll listen to on Wheeler is he's 35. Okay, that's fine. If you want to throw that out there. But as you mentioned, he's turned into this guy that just knows how to come back from injury and just deal. Like, he's been healthy for the most part. And even a couple of years ago when he missed, like, the first month, came back healthy the rest of the year. Like, there was nothing to concern about. So, love Wheeler. Love everything about him, minus the part the Giants traded him a long time ago. All right, here he is, Aaron Nola. Another guy, though, like, yes, the production has slowly declined. He's going to be 32 this year. Still pumps innings, puts him out over and over again. And I think that's what keeps his ADP in the 80 to 90 range, give or take. How are you feeling on Aaron Nola this year? Again, like I said, production keeps declining, but he's out there pretty much every fifth day.
I think he's still going to have that 200, as long as health is there, 200 innings pitched, 200 Ks. Still got a solid ratio, strong Ks. His high fastballs are still strong enough to drop in those curves and to get those whiffs and get those strikeouts. he's not vintage Nola like he was a few years ago. He does have a little bit of a home run problem, which can come in and bite him here and there. His K per nine dropping a little bit, so round, you know, K per nine of under nine right now. And I think that will continue to drop as he gets older. His cutter was terrible last year, so he's really got to revamp that specific pitch. But I think the way he's priced, I think people are sort of sleeping on Nola a little bit. I think especially if you want to go a little wild early and take one of the crochets or maybe even, you know, take that other pitchers. There's a lot of pitchers going early that have a lot of warts and question marks and injury risk. Nola, I think, is someone that can really balance out a rotation. He's a really good like SP2, SP3. An ADP of around 80, I think, is pretty solid value. There are other pitchers going in that range that maybe have higher upside, like a Schwalbach or a Imanaga, but I would only probably go with the higher upside there if I went more boring before. So, like, I wouldn't pick Wheeler and then go with Nola. I feel like that's a weird build. If I went Wheeler first, then I would go more with the question marks later. But if I went with a Gilbert or a Wheeler or a Kirby first, I'm sorry, that's when I would. But if I went with like more of a crochet or a pick like that, then I would probably want to have Nola to make sure that, you know, to balance me out, you know, in case of glass break, and then Nola can come throw his curveball and get me those fantasy stats.
Great point. And that's one of the biggest things about fantasy baseball. It's a puzzle. And how do these pieces all fit together? And that is a great way to look at Nola, because I think he still has something left on the vine, as they say, but it's not the like ace that we once saw at the same time. Yeah. This pitcher intrigues me, and that is Christopher Sanchez. We saw a massive jump in innings this past year. We saw a massive jump in production this past year. Strikeouts have been a question, but if you dig under the hood, which you probably will discuss here, especially with the pitcher list tools you have, there's stuff there for strikeouts if he utilizes it potentially. So where are we at on Christopher Sanchez? Because his ADP is around 175, 180, which has me taking a lot of shares of Christopher Sanchez these days.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think he's a great pick. I mean, he had 181 innings last season. That's a workhorse load. I think he can get even over 200 this season. Like you said, strikeouts are an issue. He only had 139, so he's not giving you that K per nine that other starters that go for 200 innings are giving you. I think he ran a 7 K per nine. But he has solid ERA. He has one of the best changeups in the league. Stuff Plus loves it. PLV from Pitcher List loves it. His sinker's solid as well. Both those two pitches have an above average out percentage, league average. So that's really good. That's what we're looking for in maybe pitchers making that next step. And with that ADP, I think there's another level here that you can cash in at that price. He's 28. He's still a little bit, you know, not as young as pitchers are, but still, you know, decent age. He's a lower K rate, but he seems to be working on a new pitch. That seems to be something that everyone's trying to figure out what this new pitch is. Maybe it's going to be a cutter, which might pair well with what else he has going with him, and might raise that K through nine from 7 to a little bit higher. He's not going to give you a K per inning right away, but I think there's potential to kind of, you know, level up a little bit on that area. His velocity over the course of the season also went up. I think his fastball rose 2 miles an hour from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. So I think the answer is yes. I think there is another level. I don't think he's going to be an ace or anything like that, but I think there's great value at 180. I think there's, as a Phillies fan, I'm super excited for him to be our third pitcher. And I think he can also be, you know, an SP3, a pretty solid SP3, SP4 for fantasy teams as well.
Yeah, especially if you wait on pitching, he's a great find later on. So I like him a ton for many, many reasons. Ranger Suarez, this is a guy that I can't figure out what to do with in drafts right now. Like, we've seen some great stuff from Suarez in the past. Some what happened stuff last year was a pretty good run, if I remember correctly. ADP's 260-ish, 270 right now. Where are we sitting on Ranger Suarez? Because it doesn't cost you a lot, but he leaves a lot of question marks on a fantasy team.
He's basically the pitching version of Alec Boehm when you kind of like look at the splits also, and just like the frustration that Phillies fans have with him right now. So he had a great, amazing first half. He was the NL Pitcher of the Month in April. 2.76 ERA in the first half, 5.65 ERA in the second half. He did have a back injury, so probably played into it. This is another one of those Phillies walk year stories last year of the contract, which is why there's a lot of questions about perhaps it's on the trade market, perhaps another team's gonna pick him up. And we'll get into also questions about when we get to Lizardo and Painter and possible fifth starters. We don't even know if Suarez is going to stay in the rotation. You know, he might start, he's going to start as the fourth pitcher in the rotation, but there is a path to see him lose that by the end of the year. So right now his ADP, I think you said it's 265, 270 around.
Yeah, in that range.
So even like a couple weeks ago, it was higher. So he seems to be dropping in the eyes of fantasy players. I think he's just going to become he's not a value. I'd rather use a pick around that area for a high upside arm like Lodolo, Rasmussen, Springs, even Jackson Jobe is going then. Like, those are the kind of guys I want to draft with a pick that late. I don't really want to touch Suarez. I don't think there's another level here. And again, there's that split. Is it injury related? But I didn't see him, you know, and nothing tells me as a Phillies fan or as a fantasy analyst that he's going to be making a jump anytime soon.
Fair enough. I appreciate that. Let's talk Jesús Luzardo. Traded over from the Marlins, guy that was once the top prospect, one of the top prospect pitchers in baseball. Injuries have hampered his career, but 2 years ago was great. Last year couldn't shake the injury yet again. Reports are he's fine, obviously. That's why they traded for him. He passed those tests. So you got to take it for what it's worth, I guess. And the thing that really gets me interested is his ADP is around 230, 235. Which is a gift if we get anything close to the Luzardo we know we can get. I know big ifs involved there. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are your thoughts on Luzardo as he becomes a Philadelphia Philly?
So I don't know if it's a gift or if it's a trap. So I'll try to
explain. Yeah, I'm with you. That's what's confusing about the ADP. It's like, this seems too good to be true. What am I doing here? And I've taken the bait if it's a trap. I'll tell you that much.
So I saw a crazy stat from Matt Gelb, who's the Athletic beat writer for the Phillies. And he said last year from any pitcher that wasn't named Wheeler, Nola, Sanchez, or Suarez, the Phillies had 171 and a third starting innings from them, 39 starts. And they had a combined 636 ERA and 42 home runs combined. So I think that was a lot of the motivation that caused us to go out and look for a fifth starter. We had Taiwan Walker last year. That didn't work. He's actually getting paid $18 million a season. Schwarber's making $20 million a season. Kind of terrible signing. But enter the trade for 27-year-old Luzardo. And when I first heard about it, I was super stoked. I'm like, oh, Luzardo, because you always remember the good things about Luzardo. And that's the ceiling. Like you said, in 2023, 358 ERA, 208 strikeouts. He has a fastball up that tops out 96, 97. He gets whiffs from his secondaries. But then there's the risk, which is last year, the injuries. He made 12 starts last year. He had elbow tightness, lumbar stress reaction, ended his season. He logged 101 innings only once, more than 101 innings. Even his fastball speeds have been fluctuating. Terrible extension. He's one of the pitchers that pitcher list says to fade based on out percentage. He's meaning you have one or fewer pitches with an out percentage above league average. He says he's feeling good from reports that he's going into spring training healthy. He has 2 years of club control, so he's not going anywhere. I feel like if he does well in his first couple starts in spring training, his price is going to skyrocket because 100%. Of that name and because of that, like that season that he had and the seasons that he's had. So like, even now I kind of feel like, I don't know if I'm in, I have to kind of think of him, like, what happens if he'd be wearing like a Mets jersey? Like, would I be in? Like, is there that Phillies like aspect to it? And maybe all fantasy players should do that. Put on the jersey of your player, the worst enemy, and see what you would think about him. I think that definitely if his price goes up, which I think it will as we get into spring training, then I'm definitely out. I think there's too much risk baked in. I think as a Phillies fan, it's sort of like a wait and see. If this doesn't work, we have other pitchers coming up behind him. So it's really like a lottery ticket, but it's not necessarily a lottery ticket I want to buy for my fantasy team.
Trust me, as a Giants fan, I get to watch a lot of players wear the jersey of the team I don't like because they signed them all in LA. So I'm well used to that. But yeah, it's kind of my thought of why I'm taking him so much, I think, is his. I feel his ADP is going to go up. So I'm going to take the chance now, see where things go. Yeah. Doesn't cost me a lot. I get the concerns, and that's why I was kind of wondering what you were hearing there is he has not been the epitome of health, but he's saying he's healthy, but we know how many players don't always tell the truth. So it does make things. Yeah, that's probably why his ADP is where it's at until we see more information. All right, before we get to the bullpen, and we'll talk Painter when we talk prospects in a bit, is there anybody else worth talking about? Is Taiwan Walker worth discussing? I don't think so. Anybody else before we head to the bullpen?
Now let's jump into the bullpen.
All right, let's get to it now, because almost similar to the what should we do with Lizardo and his health history, Jordan Romano comes to town. You know, the Jays did not bring him back. That was interesting. The Phillies, they've in recent years have used multiple guys, Hoffman and company, Alvarado, Dominguez. Like, they've had a bunch of good guys fill in and do the thing. Even Estevez got traded for it and was good last year. Now they're pretty much all out of town. Well, Hoffman and Estevez are out of town. Dominguez obviously got traded. Romano, ADP 185, does not cost a lot. Eventually, I thought it would come moving up. It has not moved a ton in the positive direction here. What are we thinking on Romano? A bunch of injuries last year.
So he himself said that he wanted to specifically sign a one-year deal rather than a longer one with options, because he wanted to prove to the league and to himself that he can get back to the levels that he was as the Blue Jays closer and hopefully cash in, you know, in 2026. In the bullpen right now, reports seem to be saying he's hitting mid-90s with his fastball, which is what we want to see. If he has a strong spring, then there's no reason to think that Romano won't be the de facto closer in Philly. So I think at his price right now, especially early before the price rises, I think it's an easy sort of pick for me as like, this could be the closer of one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. Like, why wouldn't I go out there and grab him at such a low pick? And if I'm looking at like other arms in the bullpen that might compete for saves, so I saw that Orion Kerkering has like an ADP of around 300.
People love him, yes.
Yeah, and he's great as a Phillies player, Phillies fan. I know how awesome he is. I find it kind of strange that people are hedging their bets here, because if Romano falters and doesn't become the closer, I don't think it's going to be here are the keys to the closing role to Kerkering. I think what we saw last year was this roundtable of just a bunch of different back end closers or closer relief pitchers. Obviously, we lost Hoffman, who probably would have been our next in line to be the closer. But you have Strom, you have Alvarado, you have a lot of pitchers that I think are going to save games for the Phillies if the Romano experiment doesn't work. But I wouldn't necessarily waste a pick on a speculative ad of who could possibly be the closer. I would rather just, you know, throw my pick at Romano. I think that he has the ability to, if he's coming into the spring healthy, to run away with the job.
Yeah, as we get closer and closer to spring, I've been grabbing more and more Romano shares, because it's like they could still go out of Finnegan or a Robertson or whoever, like Jansen. They're still out there. That's fine. I just don't see them doing that for a couple of reasons. A, it's getting closer to the season. They haven't done it yet. Uh-huh. B, you mentioned towards the top of the show, it's a lot of one-year deals, a lot of platoon things. They haven't been going to making the splash, which you can get a Robertson or a Finnegan for a one-year deal probably, but you get my gist of where I'm kind of going with this. Yeah, for sure. So I think they're going to let Romano do it. And as long as he's healthy, it's his gig. And I think I'm at 180-ish for a potential starting closer. If you wait on closers or you want like to wait on your second or even go get a third, like this is a gift. It feels like, again, gifts or curse or traps, as you said, which that's fantasy in a nutshell. But if you're looking for values, I guess a guy like Romano is a guy you should potentially go for. All right, now let's talk some prospects, because this is a team that still has a couple years back doing the show, they had a lot. And, yeah. But that's what happens when you become good. You got to trade them, or they actually are on the team now. That's life in this world. Let's just start at the top here with one Andrew Painter, because the report actually came out where they expect him to be with the team by midseason. Then a report came out this past week that says he'll start out of the bullpen, not in the rotation. I know there's a lot of flapping of gums right now. Who knows? what are you seeing? What takes place here? Because people love him and they're still drafting him like he's going to be the guy this year. And I think the Paul Skeens effect last year has a lot to do with this. But Painter once was the top dude, looked good in the fall league. So I'll stop talking. What's your thoughts on Andrew Painter?
Yeah, Paul Skeens will have an effect. We always want the next Paul Skeens. But like you said, he was one of the top pitching prospects in the game a couple of years ago. He had that prolonged elbow injury, caused him to miss almost two seasons with Tommy John. And he came back in the Arizona Fall League and dominated. 15.2 innings, 230 ERA, 18 strikeouts, touched triple digits on his fastball, had command of his pitches. Like everything we would want to see, we want to see make sure Painter's back to the way he was before. He almost won a job as a starter 2 years ago, like when he was in spring training when he got injured. So I think the Phillies are expecting him to eventually be a starter, but now they're putting the kid gloves on. They want to make sure that we take the slow. We don't, push him in any way. So probably any point between June to August, but I would say probably closer to end of July. That's probably the time we're going to see Painter from what I hear. He's going to be in an innings count, but those innings are going to be elite innings. So that's like 75 to around 100 innings, maybe if we're lucky, of really quality, good ace innings. Now, is he going to be a starter or is he going to be in the bullpen? So if you look at who we have as our fourth, fifth starters, you know, you have Suarez, we talked about him. Lizardo could get injured tomorrow or could just falter. So there are opportunities there for him to grab that fifth or fourth starting role right from the get-go. And I think having that extended sort of ramp-up time to get there is to essentially make him a starter. They wouldn't do that if they just want to throw him into the bullpen. So I totally see Painter coming in mid-July, end of July, and taking over one of those starting positions and having a great run, especially when you have other pitchers that are sort of maxing out their innings around then. And then you have this ace-like pitcher come in and you know for sure you're going to have 75 to 100 innings of ace potential. So that's great. That can fill a hole in a roster right then. So I'm drafting him at his price. I think he's great in drafting holes. I think in any league, he's a good pick very, very late. It's interesting that his ADP is kind of similar to Scherzer and Verlander, yes, or like the complete opposite, right? Verlander and Scherzer, you probably also expect around 75 innings, maybe hopefully of elite pitching, whatever that looks like at their age. But I would much rather have Andrew Painter than Verlander or Scherzer. I want those innings, which I know are going to be elites, and hopefully he just stays healthy and he can make that appearance in July and run for the rest of the year.
And you know, coming up in July, at the end of July, is the perfect storm if they do want to trade a Rangers for us or something to bolster a better spot on the team or whatever. So it's almost like people say they have to trade to improve their team. Well, they actually get to call up a player to improve their team potentially and trade something else. So yeah, definitely, I'm excited to see it and see where it goes. And a lot of people are, obviously, because he is the talk of the town in drafts. What other prospects are we potentially looking to see maybe have an impact this year with the Philadelphia Phillies?
So the following prospect I put on, Moises Chesse. I actually, interestingly enough, as a Phillies fan, I only learned about this through something that a colleague at PitcherList talked about, Trevor Huth, who seems to be very high on him. He's on the 40 man. He's a 21-year-old flamethrower, throws a good fastball, hard. He throws a great changeup. He's very young. He got to AA at the end of last season, but just Google him and you can see, like, you know, the first thing comes up is like 13 strikeout game, and just watch his highlights. It's some pretty sweet pitching over there. And he seems to be closer to the big leagues after a little bit of digging than I thought. He could even make a run for a spot not in the rotation, but at least in the bullpen right out of spring training. So I think there might be a path, if injuries hit, there could be at the end of the season. He's not someone you're drafting. He's not someone you're just remember the name. I think that he's someone that you might want to dump some fab on later if all things break right for Chesse, maybe not for the Phillies and their pitchers. But I do think he's not necessarily the next Zach Wheeler, but he is someone that I think could be a very serviceable pitcher and get you strikeouts with hopefully not too many walks towards the end of the season if he does get called up and needs to take over for either a traded Suarez or an injured Lizardo, whatever it may be.
Sweet. Anybody else to think about? Because that's I love a guy like a Chase late in a DC. That's like a perfect little target there, a nugget to keep later. Yeah. Anybody else to look at?
There's a couple of bats that are going to be the next big bats coming up for the Phillies. I would be surprised to see them this year in the big leagues, but there's always that path that could open up. You have Aiden Miller, who's a shortstop, which would likely transition to a third baseman. I think he's kind of going to make a run for Alec Boehm's position, to be honest. If Alec Boehm gets traded, then I think then you want to focus in on Aiden Miller and see his spring training a little bit more, see where he's getting to. He's a little more polished than the second guy I want to bring up, which is Justin Crawford, who's an outfielder, son of Carl Crawford. So just putting Miller separate from Crawford for a second. Miller is younger. He projects to be like an above average hitter, about probably 20 home runs, 15 steals per season. But Crawford seems to be the one that at least management cares more about and views in the same, you know, breath as Painter. But he's much more raw. He's someone who's could be an elite stolen base threat. Both of these players are going to be starting in Double A, but as we've seen lately, players make that jump. They don't need to be in AAA. It seems to be less of a league that people have to go through every single step. So I would say that we do have a greater need in outfield. So if that experiment with Kepler goes terribly or an injury hits, I don't think we're just going to take our bench and plug it in there. We might see Crawford up earlier than maybe he should be. And then think same thing with Boehm. If Boehm gets traded or Boehm gets injured or he starts off cold, then keep an eye on Miller because he might be up quicker than especially if the Phillies need to make that any like ground up in the standings at all.
Yeah, and the jump from Double A to the bigs is like you said a lot more common. Like James Anderson, I've had him say it on my show, and some others talk about that. Triple A is more just kind of like. I don't know, like Double A is like the last developmental period, just to jump from Double A to the bigs. Triple A is more just kind of a waiting room. Yeah. It's almost what it is.
Thanks sometimes.
Yeah, it's like you know who they are and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's why you do definitely see these jumps more. For those listening over the last 10 DCs, it's Chasse, right?
Yeah.
Like the dance. the Chasse ADP 737. Aiden Miller has not been drafted over the last 10, but like I see the angle you're talking about for a late pick. And Crawford 734. So all of them are, you know, last round darts in a DC, which is perfect for the things we're looking for on this show. Last question I have for you, Johnny, what are your expectations for 2025? You kind of seemed like you might've hinted at it at the beginning, but maybe not. Maybe you're throwing a curveball here. So where are we at on 2025?
I mean, the Phillies expectations are to win the World Series. I think since they got there with this crew built around Harper, like, That's their goal. It's World Series or bust. For me, you know, seeing how tough the NL East is, I can't imagine. I'll be surprised and very happy if we defend our NL East crown. But honestly, I don't see them getting past the Braves, Mets, let alone the Dodgers in the playoffs. I don't know if I trust it. I really have to see them coming out of the gate strong and lose that streakiness. If that rotation really hits all five pitchers and we have Painter come up and they blow us away, then maybe I'll have a little bit more faith. But right now, I guess I'll have to rely on the Eagles to give me some championship happiness here.
All I know is I'll be rooting for the Phils because as just a baseball fan, there is not a better postseason environment than the bank.
Oh my gosh,
that
yeah.
Place is insane. I was on a Phillies show last year. And I told him, I said, if I like bucket list now is to go to a Phillies postseason game. It just looks. Sorry,
yeah. I was at the Phillies game when they won the walk off with Casty. got lucky, you know, all the other games they lose, but thankfully that it was insane back and forth. Like you got to do it. Come out to a Phillies game in the playoffs. Nothing like it.
Yep. Going to check that out for sure. But all right. Before we log out of here, remind everybody where they can find you these days.
So like you said before, I'm on Blue Sky. I write periodically for Pitcher List and I edit for them and for Rotoballer. So look for me on Pitcher List for some of my content.
Yep, I used to write for Rotoballer back in the day. Obviously did some work at Pitcher List. So places I do support. So go check those out, of course. And check them out there on Blue Sky at johnnygo.bsky.social. All that fun stuff. But Johnny, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Bubba. Love to be here.
All right, everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 733, your 2025 Philadelphia Phillies team preview. Catch you all next time.